And we're holding on Nimbez Amadez, beginning the fifth parak of our Masechta. So now in this parak, we're going to be talking about the various types of menachos and how they're made. At the end of the previous parak, we learned specifically about the menachos chavitim. So now in our parak, we're going to talk more generally. The Mishnah says, "Kol menachos bois matzos." All menachos are brought as matzah. With the exception of the chometz bread with the Torah, a carbon Torah comes with 40 loaves of bread, of which 10 of them are chometz, and also then the shtei lechem on Shavuos, as we learned in the previous parak, are also chometz. Tosfos points out that technically the bread with the Torah is not really considered a mincha anywhere that we find. Nevertheless, the Mishnah does want to tell us how it's made, and specifically how it and the shtei lechem are made chometz, which is going to be the focus of our Mishnah, and therefore it puts it together, even if the bread with the Torah is not technically a mincha. Nevertheless, we are discussing it here, and it is going to be discussed later in the Masechta about the size of it and various other details of it. So, how do we make them chametz? Now, you know, obviously you leave dough long enough, you leave it sitting long enough, it will become chametz. However, the Tiferes Yisrael points out that the Gemara is, the Mishnah is bothered by the question that if it, within one day, it's not really going to become, it's going to become chametz, of course, but it won't be good quality chametz, and we're putting it, and we're talking about they have to be kneaded inside the azara and in a kli sharis, so necessarily it has to be that day, so then we're going to have to use sourdough. So the question is how we do it, what do we do as far as the sourdough? Reb Meir says what you do like this. Hasur boidu lahem mitoichan. You take out a piece of the isoran itself. You take out of the isoran flour that's going to be for the 10 breads of the Torah, which is going to be divided into 10 loaves, or the isoran that's going to be for each of the shtei lechem. What you do is you take out a piece, you take a little bit of it, you measure it out, then you take a little bit of it, and you make a piece of sourdough of it. And then you use it to some boidul hen mitochem. We separate it out from among it, or mechamtsan, and we use that to make the whole rest of the batch chometz. Rabbi Yehuda says afhi einim min amuvchar. You know what? You do that kind of thing, it's not really going to become good quality chometz, because you really need, in order to make good quality chometz bread, you need to have well prepared sourdough. And the way you're describing it, that you're just going to take a little bit of it and make it chometz and make it into sourdough into sa'ur, and then use it to do the rest. You haven't really left it long enough to become good sourdough, and therefore to make it good quality chametz. Ella, rather, Rabbi Yehuda says, what you do is maybe a sasa'er, you take an existing piece of sourdough, the noisin l'sech amida, and you put it into the measuring container that you're going to be measuring out the yisoran, or mamalos amida, and then you fill the rest of it, and then you fill the rest of it up with flour. So this way, you're using good quality sourdough from a batch that's already been in your house for a while. Obviously, in your house, you're going to have to make sure that it has all the characteristics of flour for a mincha. It's going to have to be kept in 100% tara, and then it's going to have to be sourless, good quality flour, etc. But obviously, anybody who's going to be making such a thing is either going to make sure they have their own, or they're going to buy, or they're going to get from a supplier. Anyway, so Rabbi Yehuda says you do that. You have an existing piece of sourdough, which is already good quality, and then you put it in, and then you fill up the rest of the flour around that. Omru Lloyd, on the answer to Rabbi Yehuda, that's not really the best way either. Afi hoisa chasera or yisera. Sometimes it can come out then that the you're going to have the isoran is going to be too little or too much, because it depends. How was that piece of sur made? If it was made with very little water, then it takes up very little space in the container. So therefore, now when you put in more flour, then you're going to end up having the isoran is going to be overflowing. And if, on the other hand, it's a soft piece of sourdough, then it comes out that eventually, in other words, either way, the Chachamim are saying not so much that it's going to overflow or it's going to underflow, but in other words, they're telling him, think about, well, how much flour went into the sourdough. It's going to take up a different volume than it did as just flour, depending on how dryly or how wetly it was made to begin with. how much water it has in it, and therefore you're not going to have in the measure necessarily a complete isorin. And isorin, as you have to realize, is a measure of volume. Most of the measurements that we're usually familiar with in Gemara, the revius, the lug, the isorin, the eifa, etc., all of the various ones, most of them are pretty much all of them are units of volume, not of weight. So they're saying you can't just weigh it and see how much there is in it. We have to go by volume. But when you consider volume, so if you have, in other words, if you have a piece of a complete isorin, and like when Meir says, you take some of it out and you make the sourdough out of that and then you put it back in, fine, you're guaranteed that you have a complete isorin because you started with an isorin and you didn't use any other flour. But you, Rabbi Yehuda, are telling us you take a piece of sour from someplace else. How do you know then how are you going to make sure that you have the amount of flour that you add is going to exactly make up an isorin, no more or no less. So therefore, better not to do it your way. They're telling him. So we'll see in the Gemara. We'll see in the Gemara how Rabbi Yehuda answers that objection. Tosfos points out that you learn from this as well. That, for example, you know, we have to eat a certain volume of matzah on Pesach. Same idea. In other words, when we talk about you have to eat a kazayis of matzah, kazayis is a measure of volume. Or when we're measuring flour for challah, then by the same token, it means we shouldn't be pressing the flour in too much, because then you have the same kind of problem. Then you have too much. There is in fact quite a bit of discussion in various sforim about shiurei Torah, about exactly how tightly do we pack the flour or the matzah or whatever in order to figure out the volume. Because I'm a relevant thing also as far as this is a Mishnah in Seder Taurus that tells us that when you have a spongy type of bread, then you don't compress it to the Mishtaeres Kamos Shehi. You figure out the volume of it as it is with all the hollows and spaces in it. Obviously that's not relevant to matzah, but in other words we're talking about the rest of the year whenever you need to know a minimum shear of food for various purposes in halacha, then you go according to how it is with all the bubbles and everything in it. However, then the Mishnah says if it has an empty space in it, then you have to squeeze that down, and there's quite a bit of discussion how to reconcile those two things, what exactly it means, and how we figure out the volume of matzah for Pesach and the volume of other and the volume of flour for shiur challah and other kinds of mitzvahs like that. So the Gemara starts off. Now, the Mishnah had started by saying that all menachos on matzah, with the exception of the two that we said, the chometz bread of the Torah and the shteh lechem. So the Gemara says, "Bominir a preda min Rav Ami." So the preda asks Rav Ami, "Minayim l'chol menachos shein bois matzah? How indeed do we know that all menachos have to be brought as matzah?" The Mishnah has told us that, but what is the source for it? Now Tosfos brings up the question. The next Mishnah is going to tell us on Daf Nun Hey that menachos are kneaded with warm water, and you make sure that they don't become chometz. And the Mishnah itself brings a pasuk because it says that menachos have to be kept not chometz. And if you do, then your oivana, if a person does, then he's oivana loisase. So then what's your prayer's question? And then when Rav Ami gives him an answer, Rav Ami is going to give him an answer from Psukim. Why don't you just quote in the pasuk that the Mishnah mentions over there? So first Tosfos says, because he didn't understand Rav Preda's question, he thought that Rav Preda is asking, he thought that Rav Preda is asking, yes, the Mishnah tells us you're not allowed to make them chometz, but how do we know they have to be, so Rav Ami, in other words, is asking, what do you mean? What do you mean? What's the question? It says clearly in the Torah, and he's bringing psukim, not necessarily the psukim that it says in the Mishnah, because he didn't understand really the question. Where is Rav Preda coming from? He's asking a question. Is he not familiar with that Mishnah? And therefore, he figured it would give him more straightforward psukim to answer. To answer the question. And then the Gemara will clarify what the previous question was. Then Tosfos brings in a bit of Tam, wanted to give a different explanation. The Gemara is going to mention soon something called Siur, which is when you leave dough and it starts becoming chometz, the earliest stage of it becoming chometz is called Siur, not to be confused with Sa'ur, which is sourdough. Siur is the very beginning of the process of it becoming chometz. So to put it in modern terms, you know, when dough becomes chometz, what it means is you've got yeasts that are working on it. You've got the single-celled creatures, yeasts, that are working on it and taking the sugars and the starches in it and converting them into alcohol. which produces the bubbles and everything. So now, when you have the earliest stages of that, when they've just gotten to work and are starting to produce their carbon dioxide and their alcohol, so then you have a stage called Si'ur, which the Gemara will define more precisely soon. So Rabbeinu Tam wants to explain that the previous question was, how do we know that it can't be Si'ur? Or another possibility that maybe it could be Cholot, which is that you take the dough, and the Gemara is going to talk about this soon also, that you take the flour or the dough and you put it in boiling hot water before you continue the process. Now that'll prevent it from becoming chametz, of course, because that'll kill off any of the yeasts. But nevertheless, it's not matzah. You can't use such a thing for matzah on Pesach, for example. So Rabbeinu Tam wants to understand that was a previous question. So Rabbeinu Tam wants to explain that was a previous question. But Tosfos says Hirush is dochel from a gumgum. This is a doichek, and it's hard to understand this Pirush. So Tosfos prefers their own Pirush, which is basically that Rav Ami didn't understand where the prayer is coming from, and he figured, look, if he doesn't know the Mishnah, then fine, I'll give him simpler psukim to understand the point. Anyway, so Rav Ami says, what kind of question? Dichtivba ksivba, those menachas of which it says the Pirush that they have to be matzah. Then ksiba, then it says on it. For example, the Torah tells us about menachas that are baked in an oven and that are fried in a pan, where the Torah clearly says on them matzah siya, that they should be matzah. So then obviously those have to be matzah. Deloy ksiba, and as far as the ones where it doesn't say explicitly, fine. Ksiba zois teres a mincha. The pasuk says this is the rule of the mincha. Hakri vois a bnei Aaron l'pnei Hashem. The sons of Aaron should offer it before Hashem. El pnei mizbeach, in front of the mizbeach, from which we learned earlier in the sechta that you have to take the keli with the mincha after you do the before you do the kmitzah. The kohen takes the keli with the mincha and touches it to the southwestern corner of the mizbeach, and the pasuk continues, "Vaneseres mimena, what's left over of the mincha, yochel Aaron uvanav, Aaron's sons should eat it, matzahs te'ochel, and has to be eaten as matzahs." So we see very clearly that all menachos have to be eaten as matzahs. And it says Zos Teres HaMincha includes all the menachos. So Rav Ami asks the trader, what is your question exactly? So again, according to Tosfos' first explanation, Rav Ami is wondering what is Rav Preda even thinking to ask the question, and therefore he brings him from a very obvious way of understanding this concept. According to Rabbeinu Tam's explanation, the answer is that the pasuk makes a point of saying that it has to be matzah, meaning it has to be something which would be valid as matzah for Pesach, so therefore it can't be siur, as the Gemara is going to talk about now, and it can't be cholot, can't be that the flour was put in boiling hot water, because that would prevent it from becoming chametz, and you can't use that for matzah either. Omalei, the sort of prayer to answers, mitzvah like kamaboyli. Look, my question is as follows. To know that there's a mitzvah to do that, that's not my question. Sure, your psukim, or the pasuk later on, in the perek, in the Mishnah, will tell me that well enough. Ki kamaboyli, la'akiv. My question is, how do we know that's ma'akiv? That a mincha that becomes chametz is possible. Now, Tosfos points out, wouldn't the word Zos Teres itself be good enough for that? And the answer is that may be only fine. The ones where it says on them explicitly, Matzah Siyah, that should be Matzah, and now it says Zos Teres HaMincha, so we would be one of those cases of Shana Olav HaKosav La'akiv, where the Torah is repeating it, and therefore it's going to be Ma'akiv. But what about when it comes to a mincha of plain flour, or a mincha baked in a deep frying pan, a Ma'cheshes, where it doesn't say on them Matzah Siyah, so then maybe, so maybe it wouldn't be Ma'akiv? And then Tosfos says that explanation is a doichek and has some other questions on it. So Tosfos answers that fine. Maybe the vote is the matzah siya by the ones where it does say it is maybe meant for some other drosha. So therefore, it's not necessarily that the Torah is repeating it twice unnecessarily, and that you should say that it's ma'akiv. So therefore, the parader is asking, how do we know that it's ma'akiv and a mincha that became chometz is possible? Amalei, Rav Ami answers, ma'akiv nami ksiv loisa off a chometz. Because to be ma'akiv also, the pasuk says you should not bake it chametz. Ella, so that means the implication is matzah. So that means the implication is that it must remain matzah. So there you go. So that's how we know that it's also ma'akiv, and if it's not matzah, it's going to be possible. Okay. Well, the Gemara says, maskif for Rav Chista, but Rav Chista asks on that, how do you know? The ema loisi off a chometz, ella siur. Maybe the Torah is telling us you can't bake the mincha, you can't make it complete chometz, but it can be siur. So how do you know that? How do you know that it has to be actually full-fledged matzah and it can't have reached that stage of seir, which is again the initial stage, one of the initial stages of it fermenting? Well, the Gemara asks, what is Rav Chisda's? Let's figure out what Rav Chisda is referring to. Now you have like this in a Mishnah in Pesachim. In a Mishnah in Pesachim, you have a machlokas of Meir and Rabbi Yehuda about seir. First of all, they argue what is the definition of seir. So like this, the first thing that happens when dough starts fermenting, when the yeasts get to work on it, is the first thing it turns pale. Rav Meir holds that's the point called seir. Then you have the next stage is called kekaune chagovim, which is where you have two tiny cracks in it, like the kaune chagovim really means the antennas of locusts. So like you have a locust has long skinny antennas. So the same way you have two tiny cracks over here. So now, according to the mayor, when the dough has turned pale, it's called seer. A person is not yet chayv kares for eating it on Pesach, but it's also at that point, later on, it comes kekane chagavim, and now the mayor would hold that that's full-fledged chometz, and a person would be chayv kares for eating it. As opposed to Rabbi Yehuda holds that, no, when it turns white, it's still considered matzah. Yes, you're not allowed to eat it, but that would be only Dirabbanan, Tosfos points out. According to Rabbi Yehuda, it would still be Mutar B'Hanah, and even to eat it would be also only Dirabbanan. Rabbi Yehuda holds, when it's the Kane Chagavim, when it's like the antennas of locusts, then that's the point where it's called Seer. Now you're not allowed to eat it, but a person is not yet Chayiv Karis for it. When is he Chayiv Karis? Only when you have a lot of cracks in it. She's Arvus Stuck of Zebazeh, where the cracks run one into another one. Then he'd be Chayiv Karis for it. The Gemara actually explains there, that Meir would answer back, you know what, if you see only two cracks on the surface, it means there's a lot of cracks already inside the dough, because, you know, after all, you have the carbon dioxide is being produced, and it's causing cracks to form. So you may see only a couple on the surface, but you can be assured that below the surface there are a lot more. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda, if you're going to tell me once the cracks run together, then it's full-fledged chometz, well, I'm going to answer, says Rabbi Meir, that even when there are only a couple of cracks on the surface, it's already at that stage, you just don't realize it yet. In any case, so again, going back to our Gemara over here, Rav Chisda is suggesting that maybe the words loisa of a chometz mean that you could that it can't be chometz, but it could be seer. Well, the Gemara says seer deman. Well, which definition of seer is Rav Chisda using for purposes of his question? E did a Meir. Is he talking about Rav Meir's definition of seer, which is when it turns white? Lid of Yehuda, and he's asking according to Rabbi Yehuda that it should be mutter to have the mincha reach that stage. Well, yeah, matzah malia. The fact is, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it is 100% matzah, and therefore, yes, indeed, it would be mutter. So then, in that case, then the pasuk wouldn't be telling us it can't be made chometz, but it can be made seer, because seer, according to Rabbi Yehuda would say that a Meir's definition of seer is still matzah. The most would be, as we're saying, there's a person really also to eat it, did I bother me? But nevertheless, it would still be, it would still be considered matzah, and therefore the mincha could perfectly well have reached that stage. The Eidid of Yehuda Ulur Meir, are you going to say the other way around, that he's asking Rabbi Yehuda's definition of seer when it has the two cracks, and the question is according to the Meir? Of course not. Chometz Maliyah, the according to the Meir, at that point, it's 100% Chometz, and a person is Chayiv Karis for it on Pesach. So of course it would be possible by Menachos. You can't say, don't allow it to become Chometz, but allow it to become seer. If you're talking about that definition of seer, two cracks, and you ask according to the Meir whether it would be allowed, well yeah, that's Chometz at that point. The Eid of Meir, are you asking about Rav Meir's version of seer according to the Meir himself, where the Meir himself holds that once it turns pale, then it's no longer pure matzah, it's already at this point seer, and it's also to eat as the beginning of chometz of it, but he's not yet chayiv karis? Well, again, the answer is, of course, since a person, according to the Meir, a person would get malchus for eating seer of that type. Chometz, so obviously Rav Meir considers it chometz. Fine, it's not full-fledged chometz to the extent it would be chayiv kares on it, but at least it would be on the way to becoming chometz. At least it's a type of chometz, and therefore the mincha couldn't be that. Tosfos points, so this kind of thing where it's incomplete chometz is what's called in halacha terminology, it's called chometz nuksha. Nuksha literally means hard, so it means it's like hard chometz. It hasn't yet become real, full-fledged chometz yet, but nevertheless, it's still, but it's still at the stage of chametz. And then Tosfos discusses a little bit what exactly the basis would be to say that it should be considered that we should even learn the mincha from the dinim of matzah on Pesach, and then and all kinds of details about that, how we know indeed that a person would be chayav malchus for it. In any case, the question is, so what's the premise of Rav Chista's question? If he's saying that conceivably the Mishnah might be telling us that Kol HaMenachos Bois and the Tosef would be telling us that the Menachos have to be matzah, as opposed to they cannot be seer, but so far we have either seer is 100% still matzah, and is at most also drabanon, or it is in fact also, and then either also by a lav or also by karis. So Ella, rather, Rav Chista's question is, did Rav Yehuda, lit Rav Yehuda? The question is, Rav Yehuda's definition of seer, according to Rav Yehuda himself, namely, when it has cracks, when it has two cracks in it, and Rav Yehuda holds that when it only has those two cracks, you're not allowed to eat it. So you're not allowed to eat it, but nevertheless, it would still be only Dirabonon at that point. There wouldn't be Malchus. So now the question is, the Chista's question is, how do you know, according to Rav Yehuda, at least, maybe you should say that the Pesach is telling us, loisa of a chometz, a mincha cannot be made chometz, but that means once it's chometz to the extent where you have many cracks on the surface. Rav Yehuda apparently doesn't care about the cracks on the inside, like Rav Meir is. He says once there are cracks on the outside, only two cracks, like two small cracks like that, then it's still only seer, and a person is not yet chayiv koris for it, and he's not even chayiv malchus for it, Rabbi Yehuda would hold, unlike Rabbi Meir. So therefore, Rav Chista is asking, according to him then, could we possibly say that the Pasuk is telling us that it can be seer, it just can't be any further than that in becoming chametz? So that's one question. So Rav Ami had said, because the Pasuk says loisa of a chametz, implying that it has to be matzah, but how do you know? Maybe the Pasuk is just telling us that it can't be seer. Maybe it's not telling us that it has to be full-fledged matzah. And then that, in other words, then there's still room for the previous question. Master for Rav Nachman Yitzchok. And Rav Nachman Yitzchok also asks on Rav Ami, the aim of loisa of a chametz, el acholu. Maybe when the Pasuk is saying that mincha shouldn't be made chametz, means that you have to do cholut. You have to take the dough and put it in boiling water, the dough or the flour or whatever, and put it in boiling water, and then bake it and make a mincha out of it. Actually, I said it wrongly before. I said before that cholut would not be kosher for matzah for Pesach. Technically, it is actually. It's the Gemara. There's Gemara, relevant Gemara in Yevamos that mentions that. That it is possible for menachos, but it is kosher for Pesach. Anyway, so maybe that's what it means. Maybe the Torah is just telling us you have to make it cholut. Well, the Gemara asks, cholut ma'inir rebucha. Well, cholut is another name for rebucha. You have certain kinds of menachos that are brought as rebucha. We talk where the pasuk says that it murbeches to Vienna. It says it about the minchas kavitin of the Kohen Gadol, for example. When we talked about that at the end of the previous parak, that in fact you do that. You put the flour in boiling water at the beginning of the process. Well, then the same thing. And you have a couple of other cases where you have to bring, you have some of the bread that comes with the Torah also has to be revucha. Well, same thing. Ika revucha. Well, if it's something that is supposed to be revucha, the osi revucha, it says on the side it's supposed to be. If it's a mincha that is supposed to be revucha, well then, ksiba revucha. Well, then the Torah says that it should be revucha. And then, you don't need a posik to tell us that it shouldn't be otherwise. And if it doesn't say by Ravucha, and this one, the mincha that we're talking about, loik sibar Ravucha, it doesn't say Ravucha, different gears on the side, eat the lector Ravucha, and if it's not supposed to eat Ravucha, holik sibar Ravucha, then it doesn't say that it should be. So where would there be a case where you think, Rav Nachman Yitzchok think that it means that you should do cholut, where the Torah itself clearly specifies which menachos should be cholut, also known as revucha, and which ones not? So the answer is Rav Nachman Yitzchok means the emet chidbo revucha, mitzvah bo revucha. So fine, maybe what it means is when you have one where the Torah tells us that it should be revucha, murbeches tivlena, that the flour should be put in boiling hot water first, mitzvah bo revucha, then there's a mitzvah to do it that way. So fine, I agree you don't need a pasuk for that, another pasuk for that, or deloik sibbo revucha, but you could argue maybe the ones where it doesn't say that it should be revucha, Maybe it means Yiboy Ravucha Laisi, Yiboy Matza Laisi. Maybe the Torah is telling us it can be whichever you want. You want to do Ravucha, you want to put it in boiling water first, and then knead it and bake it, go ahead. You want to not do that, and you want to leave it as raw flour and make it into matzah, you could also do that. So maybe then, so after all, then Rav Nachman Eichholz has a valid point. Maybe the Torah is just telling us, that, so in other words, you would have thought that, then the Torah comes and tells you, Lo Yisa'af HaChametz, meaning, but rather, it can be cholered. So maybe, by the Menachos, where it doesn't clearly say that it can't be cholered, maybe you could do that anyway. So maybe then, the pasuk that Rav Ami is bringing is not really a proof that it can't be chametz, maybe it's a proof that instead it could be cholered. And Mas V'Sorovina, and Ravina says, I have a question on Rav Ami too. The Eimel Lo Yisa'af HaChametz, maybe when it says that you shouldn't make it as chametz, that just means, v'makim gavra b'lav ba'alma, means a person does it, he was over on a lav, v'ifsula l'nifsula, but not necessarily, it does it pass all the mincha. We don't always have, sometimes a person does something wrong, it doesn't necessarily cause that the thing itself becomes possible. So therefore, Ravina says, so the same thing over here, maybe it just means, the person was over on a lav, but that doesn't make the mincha possible. That doesn't make the mincha possible because he did it. Achronim talk about various angles on it. Why wouldn't we say it's a mitzvah bo b'aveira? Or why wouldn't you say something? You have a concept which the Gemara discusses in Tumura. Whenever the Torah tells us, don't do something, over there, if he does it, mahani, is it effective or not? And the Gemara goes to a sugya of several dafim over there. So why wouldn't we say? So what's Ravina's question? If the person is over on a lab, why shouldn't the mincha be possible? And so you have a variety of
mincha.
What?
The mincha doesn't belong to the person who offers it. It belongs to the Ebishter. So why the laws of Pesach apply to mincha, even if it's chametz?
No, the person himself is bringing it. It is his. It's given to Hashem, but it's his property in the sense that it's his mincha and it's being mechaper for him, or it's accomplishing whatever it's supposed to for him. So, but besides that, here we're talking about a maisa. When you're talking about actually making it chametz, then it doesn't really matter whether it's his or not. Same principle as, listen, you know, if you have a batch of dough on Pesach and I come in and make it chametz, does that mean it's not chametz because it wasn't mine to do? No, you can only say that as far as matters that involve machshava. You can't say that as far as matters that involve maisa.
If you come to my home on Pesach and you make chametz, I'm not responsible for that. You are.
No, but if you were to eat that chametz, you wouldn't say, well, I didn't make
that
chametz.
That's different. I'm not talking.
Well, but that's what we're talking about. So we're saying, would the mincha itself be possible if the person made it chametz? So Ravina is arguing that just because the person is over on a lav wouldn't necessarily mean the mincha is possible, and maybe that's what the Torah is coming to tell us. But Achronim discussed, wait a minute, if he's over on a lav, the mincha should be possible. So they talk about
it. How can it be chametz if the flour is dropped in boiled water? It cannot be any chametz.
No, that was the previous answer. That was the previous answer. Now on a new thing. Now on a new question of Ravina. That the question is, when the Torah says lo yisa'af chametz, it's fine. It means that if a person makes a mincha chametz, he's over on a lav. How do you know the mincha itself is possible? So there's still room for a betrayer's question. How do we know? Sure, l'chatchilo is a mitzvah to make it matzah, but how do we know? B'dievet it becomes possible if not. In any case, the Achronim have a couple of answers. Maybe by Karbonus, that rule applies only if it's repeated, and we're discussing in the Gemara over here that we don't seem to have a repetition of this point. Maybe the Gemara means that if it became chometz by itself, then it shouldn't be possible to the Eved. So in other words, fine. When a person does it, then he's over on a lav, and maybe you could argue the mincha is also possible. But you could argue that if it became chometz by itself, maybe not. Therefore, Ravina is saying, therefore, so you don't really have a source clearly in the pasuk to say that if it was chametz, that the mincha itself should become possible. So based on all of that, it comes out that a prejudice question still stands. Granted, we know there's a mitzvah l'chatchila to make the menachas matzah, as Rav Ami had said. Either it says it by them explicitly, or the Torah says v'zos Torah samincha. But how do we know that's ma'akev? So we have three questions on Rav Ami had brought a pasuk lo yisa'af chametz, but we have three questions on that. Rav Chista's question that maybe it could be siur, Rav Nachman's question that maybe it could be cholor to dipped in boiling water, and Ravina's question that maybe the person is over on an iser, but the chametz is not possible, but the mincha is not possible. So the Gemara says Ela Manolan. Well then, we're back to. So where
they
does
didn't do all, They didn't do all the minchas in boiling water? How did they do it then if they didn't do it in boiling water?
Well, that's what we're going to say soon. We're going to say soon that they have to be careful to make sure they don't become chametz. The kohenim zuzimahim, we say the kohenim are very diligent about making sure that it doesn't. No, the boiling water was only for certain menachas. The minchas chavitin that we talked about previously, that the Torah says on it, mubrechas tiviena, that should be, that the flour should be put in boiling water first. A couple of other cases also where that's to be done. You have also some of the bread that comes with a toja is made that way, for example, but in general, not. Okay.
How did they do it in general?
In general, we're going to see in a second. So the Gemara says, Elamin Nolan. So after all, where do we know the answer to the Paredes question? That not only Lachatchila you have to make the Menachas as Matzah, but that the Bi'evet, if you didn't, then they become Possel. Given that, again, the Possek that Rav Amiyah brought for that purpose, three different Amiroyim pointed out, it doesn't really work. So what is the source? So the answer is Kedetanya, as we learn in a Braisa. When the pasuk says about the menachas matzah yochol mitzvah, you would think that that's only a mitzvah l'chatchila. Tamid lama tia. Therefore, the pasuk says matzah tia. So by saying tia, it shall be a kotzav kvar choiva. By that, the pasuk is making it a choiva, an absolute obligation that mincha has to be matzah. So that's talking specifically about one type of mincha, about the minchas machvas. But again, when it says zers teres mincha, then it means it applies to all of them. So there's the answer that even b'di'evet, if it was made into chometz, it would be possible. So now Reb Preda asks another question. Boimineh Reb Preda min Reb Ami. Reb Preda has another question of Reb Ami. Minayin, where do we know the concept that it says in the next Mishnah, L'chol ha-menachas sh'ni loshes v'poshrin, all menachas are kneaded with warm water. Meaning, in other words, like this. Some menachas come with flour, but you don't really have, menachas come with flour and oil, but many times you don't really have enough oil to knead the thing thoroughly, to make it into an actual dough. Some of the breads of the toida and some of the other types of the bread that come as korbanos, for example, have very little oil in them. So therefore, in order to be able to knead them, there has to necessarily be water. But the point is that it has to be capable of becoming chametz. The machlokas is showing him actually when you have flour mixed with only juice. For example, anything other than water, is it in fact capable of becoming chometz, which is relevant as far as Pesach or not? So the point is they're kneaded with water. They have to be kneaded with water, and the Mishnah says that they're kneaded with warm water. Where there's the explanation that water we know from that point. Fine, but how do we know it has to be dafka warm water? So one point is because warm water makes a better dough. So therefore, since we want the menachas to be as best as possible, then we know that they should be done with warm water. And the Mishnah says, in the Shamran Shalayach Mitzu, the Kohenim have to guard them diligently to make sure that they don't become chometz. So how do we know that point? The Preda says that they use warm water. And now, when it comes to making matzah, for example, we Bedavka don't use warm water. We use the coldest water we can in order to make it less likely to become chometz, because the yeasts don't work well or don't work at all in cold. So therefore, we use cold water. But how do we know? But by mincha, again, we're saying it'll make better quality dough if we use warm water. And the Mishnah is saying we do use warm water. And we make sure that it doesn't become chametz. We do it quickly. So the Preda asks, where do we know that point from? And the point that we have to watch them that they don't become chametz. One point that Hazanish points out that really the question is not so much how we know it can't become chametz. We already established that before. But how do we know that it has to be washed l'shma? So that's one explanation. And another explanation is that that his question was, how do we know this point that you use water in the first place in order that potentially it could become chametz, and now you have a mixture of guarding it to make sure that it doesn't? Why don't we say that we just use oil to begin with, or fruit juice or something, and then you wouldn't have that issue? So where do we know that from? So he asked, Numudena mi Pesach, can we learn it from what it says about Pesach, Dichtiv, Shmautim as a matzis, where the Torah says you should guard the matzis, from which we learn that you have a specific mitzvah to make the, to make the matzah, l'shem matzis mitzvah, and that you don't use juices or other thing with it, dafka water. So is that where we learn it from? Amalei said, Rabbi says, you don't need to learn it from the Pesach. Begufaksiv, by the mincha itself, when it says matzah siya, it shall be matzah, we can learn from the word tia, we can douch in the hay, the first hay of tia, as though it was a ches, which the Gemara often does, and therefore it says hachayeh. So therefore tia will be like techayeh, or to put it differently, hachayeh, make it alive. So make sure that it is kosher, and guard it to make sure that it can't become chametz. So that's where we learn it from, that it has to have the capability. So first of all, you learn from that, that it has to be guarded the Shema, and second of all, you can learn from that, that you don't use juice or whatever. You have to use dafka water, because that's what would make it capable of becoming chametz. And the answer is we learn it from that. We learn from the pasuk when it comes to the mincha itself, rather than having to learn it from the Pesach. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? How can you learn from those words, matzah siya, to learn this point? You just said before that the words matzah tia tell us that it's ma'akiv, that if it wasn't matzah, then it's possible. So how can you learn two things from it? So the answer is, in Cain, if it just meant to teach us ma'akiv, lichtiv kura matzah hi, then the Torah could have told us, it is matzah. It could have used the word hi instead of tia. My tia, instead it says the word tia, shamit min al-tarki, therefore you can learn both things. You can learn that it has to be matzah, and if it becomes chametz, it's possible, even b'dieved, and you can also learn that you have to do it in a way, you have to do it l'shma, or you have to do it in a way where conceivably it could have become chametz, and then you have a specific mitzvah of guarding it, and guarding it l'shma. Okay. So now, having mentioned questions of Rav Preda in connection with Dinim HaMenachos, now the Gemara brings a story in connection with him. We'll talk about in a minute, aside from the simple fact that the Gemara often does that when it brings a memra from an amora about some area in Torah, then often it'll also bring some agadta about him, but we'll talk about soon. The Keren Ora has a long explanation of how it actually ties in altogether. So, like this, Amri le Rabban le Rav Preda. One time the Talmidim, told Rav Preda, you have a visitor, Rabbi Ezra, Bar Breda Rav Abtolos, Rabbi Ezra, who was the grandson of Rav Abtolos, Duhu Asiri le Rabbalazman Azariah, he, meaning either Rav Ezra or his grandfather Rav Abtolos, is a 10th generation descendant of Rabbalazim and Azariah, Duhu Asiri le Ezra, and Rabbalazim and Azariah himself, in turn, was a 10th generation from Ezra HaSofer. This Reb Ezra, with his tremendous yichus, Koya Baba, is waiting by the gate and wants to come in. Omar, sort of pray to answers them, my kolahai, what are you making such a big deal about his yichus? Ibar Urien hu, if he's a ben Torah, if he's a Talmud Chacham, yoi, then good. Ibar Urien ubar avohan, and if he's a ben Torah, and he's also a yachson, he also has great yichus, then it's also good. But in other words, his yichus doesn't necessarily give him any greater advantage. So there's no reason to be talking in such detail about his yichus. So there's a different girsa that he says if he's a bar avohan, if he's a bar oyan u bar avohan, if he's a ben Torah and a miyuchus pika person, then yoi, then very good. In other words, sure, there's an advantage to it, but Reb Preda is saying why you have to tell me that he's the grandson of Reb Abtolos. You don't really need to go back with his whole yichus all the way to Ezra HaSofer. And he continues, and if he comes from such a distinguished yichus, from such distinguished ancestors, and he's not a Talmud Chacham, then Reb Preda says, isha techle, then a fire ought to burn him, because he's not a ben. What is he doing with such a yichus like that? And he's not using it to learn Torah from his ancestors, the Chachamim, then in a way he deserves a greater punishment. And there's various points about that as well. It means, in other words, unlike the Talmud Chachamim, who are, the Gemara tells us at the end of Chagiga, are immune to the fire of Gehenna, Reb Preda is saying if he's not a Talmud Chacham, he won't be that. Etz Yosef points out that it means like this, you have a person who has a yichus like that, has a good nature that he inherited from his ancestors, which gives him a fire that he's capable of being ben terda. But if he doesn't do that, then that fire becomes a destructive thing. There's also a gusa, not isha techlei, but ime techlei, which means let his mother be bereaved of him. In other words, if he's not a Talmud Chacham and he has that great yichus, what are you telling me about his great yichus? The important thing is whether he's a Talmud Chacham. And in fact, if he's a yachsan and not a Talmud Chacham, then he's worse off. Omrulai, so they told him Bar Urien, who this Reb Ezra, don't worry, he is a Bar Urien, he is a Talmud Chacham. Then Yehoyada points out, as a practical matter, they probably didn't tell him, you know, here the Gemara quotes them as saying Reb Ezra, the grandson of Reb Abtulas, etc. Now, if they called him to begin with Reb Ezra, in those times they didn't just give the title Rebbe to anybody, so then automatically he would have known he's a Talmud Chacham. So it must be that they just told him Ezra, the grandson of Reb Abtulas, and therefore he didn't know whether they were just calling him that because they're his friends or whether he's not a Ben Torah. So now they told him, don't worry, he's a Ben Torah. Amalahu, instead of trade to sell to somebody, good, lay over Lacey, then let him come on in. Now, Reb Trader then saw that Reb Ezra looked upset. Maybe because he overheard what Reb Trader had said about him, if he's not a Talmud Chacham, maybe for whatever reason he wasn't in a good mood. So Reb Trader wanted to chew him up and make him show that he's loved, chew him up with a piece of Agadah. Posach v'Omar. So Reb Trader started by quoting the following piece of Agadah. He says, the Pasuk in Tehillim says, Amart LaHashem, you, the pastor, David is talking to his neshama, Amart LaHashem, you have said to Hashem, Adnai Ata, you are my master, Tevasi, my goodness, Baal Olecha, is not on you. Poshit Trat in the Pasuk is something like, in other words, you don't owe me anything. You're my master, Hashem, and you don't owe me anything, I owe you everything. So now, Reb Trader darshins the pasuk as follows. Omra Knesset Yisrael, Lechnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Jewish people are saying to Hashem, Ribbono Shel Olam, on the contrary, Hachzik Li Toiva, consider me that I give you a favor, then, and therefore treat us well. Show that Ticha Ba'olam, because I've informed everybody, I've told everybody in the world about who you are. We Jewish people go and then spread the knowledge of Hashem in the world, so to speak. Act like you owe us one for that. Omalah, Hashem answers her with the end. So therefore, that's Amar Hashem Adnai Ata. I've said to Hashem, you are my master, meaning I'm saying on behalf of Hashem and telling the whole world, you're my master. Don't I deserve some reward for it? Omalah, Hashem answers her, Tevasi Balalecha, my goodness is not really on you, meaning in other words that if not you so much who I owe it to, Eini Machzik Toiva Elal Avram Yitzchak Yaakov, the one that I really consider they did me a favor and I owe them a lot, is to Avram Yitzchak Yaakov. So in other words, I'll help you in their schus, but don't think it's your own schus, it's the schus of the others. Shredi Oni Tchila Ba'olav, they are the first ones to publicize the knowledge of me in the world. Shenema is the next part, so that's Tevasi, my goodness, Balalecha is not on you. It's not to your credit, it's to the credit of the others. Shenema, as the pasuk continues, the next pasuk continues, regarding the holy ones who are in the earth, meaning the others who are buried in the earth, the adire and the mighty ones, tochet sibam, my entire desire is in them. So in other words, Hashem is saying that you think that it's to your credit that you're spreading knowledge of all the course in the world. You should know the credit really goes to your ancestors, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and I'm going to help you in their schos, not necessarily so much in your own schos.
If that's the case, why do we say all the time Hashem loves the Jewish people? He loves the others. He does not.
Hashem does love us, but Hashem is saying you're asking for credit. You should know the credit really goes to the others. They're the ones who started the job when nobody else was able to teach them. You have it by inheritance from your others. So Hashem is not saying I don't hold of you or anything. Hashem is just saying you're asking Tevasi. You're asking that Hashem should do you good for your own schus. You should realize that after all. You should realize the source is not really your own because Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov came before you. And you're going to be
that's
answered. Hashem is saying, I will answer you and I will help you in their schus. You know what? Maharsha refers to in this week's parasha where Moshe Rabbeinu is davening for the Jewish people, and what puts it over the top, what helps them win the argument is appealing to the schus of the others. Schor l'Avraham Yitzchak l'Yisrael
avadecha. We have a tremendous schus.
We have a huge schus. But Hashem is saying, But Hashem is saying there's a difference between Tchila. In fact, there's a sefer of Jerushas called Bina Le'itim, where he explains that the Ovis did it without Hashem first doing Oisus and Morfsim for them. So Avram didn't experience Oisus and Morfsim from Hashem before he started publicizing Hashem. Yitzchak and Yaakov as well. As opposed to us Jewish people, we had to first have the Nisim of Yitzias Mitzrayim and all of that. So therefore Hashem is saying that, fine, you're spreading knowledge of Elokus in the world is a tremendous thing, but you should know that the others who did that unilaterally without me even showing myself to them with Nisim and Nifloys first, they were much greater.
Why? Because we have never seen the wonders of Mitzrayim and all the things that happened.
Okay, we personally haven't, but as a nation we did, as opposed to Avraham and Yaakov didn't even need that. So the point is, again, Hashem is not saying I don't love you, Chas v'Shalom. Hashem is not saying I'm not going to do you good, but Hashem is saying you should realize that ultimately it all goes back to the others. They're the ones who really I appreciate the most, and in their schus, I'm going to help you. So before we continue...
So Hashem's love for the others is less than his love for the Jewish people?
No, but he's saying that I appreciate the others more because they accomplished what they did without anybody preceding them and without Nisim preceding them, whereas you Jewish people are not. That's all. In other words, all we get from this, we're saying is, if we say to Hashem, Hashem, you owe us one, then the answer is no, Hashem doesn't owe us anything. We should realize, as the simple meaning of the pasuk, Tevasi Balalach, Hashem doesn't owe us anything. If you want to say who Hashem owes it to, you could say to the others, and Hashem will help us in their schus.
But if we say we don't owe the schus, we say we love Hashem, just like the others did, why don't we have the same schus?
Or we actually accomplished what the others did. If we accomplished what they did, then sure. But then in that case we would also realize. I mean, Avraham himself, for example, says, "Well, Nerchi Offer Be'Ethel." He's not asking Hashem. I demand my rights. He's recognizing that everything that comes from Hashem. All right, we really have to go on.
No, we really have to go on.
We can talk about this afterwards, Ben Hashem. The Keren Oda has a long, interesting explanation about why the story of Reb Preda comes in over here, besides the simple fact that he mentioned a question from Reb Preda, and therefore we're telling a story of him, and he explains basically that when we talk about the mincha being kneaded with warm water and you have to be careful to not let it become chametz, that refers to, that hints at the point that a person has to be very diligent and careful against his yetzahara to not let it control him. So first he thinks maybe we need to learn it from Pesach. We can learn that again from the Nisim and Nifloys that Hashem did, and that will help a person keep away from his internal chametz. So Rav Ami says, it's not just that, not just you learn from Pesach, but you have to develop your own ability to do it that yourself. You might have forgotten what you learned from your ancestors, but you have to develop your own ability to conquer your Yetzirah and to realize Hashem's greatness. So now what we have is Reb Ezra comes to visit Reb Preda, and he wants to and they tell Reb Preda about Reb Ezra's ancestry. So he says to them, you know, you're telling me that he has great ancestry, that's wonderful, but the real question is he a Ben Torah himself? Does he himself work on his own das and his own shleimus? But if not then actually he's worse off. So now when he comes in, he sees that why he seems to be upset. He doesn't have his complete das, and then for an Oved Hashem, that really is the worst thing for him, that he shouldn't have that constant awareness of Hashem. So therefore, the Preda answers him, you know what, don't feel bad. This is really an argument between the Jewish people and Hashem. We're saying, Hachzikli Toiva, which means Hachzikli Toiva doesn't just mean consider that you owe me a favor. It means also strengthen your goodness to me, strengthen that your Ruach Kodesh should be strong by us and not go away because we've been Makadish your name and because Odetzich HaBa'olam, because we made the world know about you. So Hashem answers, the main thing that I'm going to do that is because of the others, because the Kedoshim Ba'ar Shabbat Tema, Ba'adire Kochef Sibam, they were constantly strongly and powerful with me. They were Adire, the word Adir means mighty. So they were strong with me constantly, and therefore I'm going to continue to do good for you because of them. So in other words, therefore, so the Preda is using that to help cheer up Reb Ezra, says the Keren Ora. you feel for a moment, you don't feel a complete das, you don't feel a complete connection with Hashem, but you should realize, after all, you do have your schus aves, and that will help you get back to where you're supposed to be, just like the Jewish people collectively can rely on the others to put us back where we're supposed to be, even if we ourselves are sometimes distracted and sometimes not where we should be mentally. So in other words, according to that, it's coming out. Not that Hashem is saying, I don't appreciate you, but Hashem is saying, you may not always be on that total level of connection, but because the others were, therefore I will continue helping you, and I'll continue helping you to regain that connection. So therefore, so the Keren Erda says that's the connection of the story with the previous Gemara. So then, the Gemara continues. Even the Shame, the Kama Adir, when Reb Ezra heard Reb Preda saying a drosha on a posik, which says the word Adir, Adire Kochef Sivan, Posach Ba'omer, then Reb Ezra replied with some droshas of his own. When we talk about Kriyas Yamsuf, the Mitzrayim were drowned in the Yamsuf. So Hashem in effect said, Yove Adir, let the mighty one come, the Yipara la Adirim, and the Yifra la Adirim, and pay back the mighty ones, Ne Adirim, the Yifra la Adirim, and pay back on behalf of the mighty Jewish people, Ne Adirim, from the mighty Mitzrayim, but Adirim, with the mighty waters of the Yamsuf. Yove Adir, Zakharish Baruch Hu. The first Adir refers to Hashem, to give Adir Bamorim Hashem. As the Pasuk says, Hashem is mighty in the heavens. The Yifra Adirim, he'll pay back on behalf, he'll take up the vengeance of the Adirim, Elu Yisrael, Shenema, the passage that we just quoted, Adire Kochav Tzivam, the mighty ones, the Jewish people, in whom is Hashem's entire desire. Ne Adirim, Hashem will punish the Adirim, Elu Amitzrim, namely the Mitzrim, just give Solo the Kaiferes, the Mayim Adirim. The Adirim drowned in the Adirim sank in the water. Now, there are Mephoshim who explain that the Mayim, and Shurup also seems to work with this better, is that the Mayim Adirim actually means in the mighty waters. However, Marashah points out that in that case, then the Pasuk is really missing a subject. Noshakta Baruchah Kisamayon, Salolo Kaiferes, Mayim Adirim, but who's the they? Who's the they who drowned in the Yamsuf? So therefore, the Gemara prefers to explain that Adirim actually refers to the mighty Mitzrayim. Salolo Kaiferes and Mayim, they sank like lead in the water. Who? Adirim, the mighty Mitzrayim. In fact, the Mishnah Berurah says that when you're saying Oz Yosher and Davening, you should in fact make a slight break between the Mayim and Adirim precisely because of this. Anyway, the Adirim, and Hashem for this purpose used Adirim, the mighty water, Eil Mayim, namely the water, Shenema, the apostle says, Mikolas Mayim Rabim, more than the noise of great of much water, Adirim, of powerful water, Mishbereyam, the breakthroughs of the sea, even greater than that, as the apostle says, Adir Bamorim Hashem. So therefore, if Ezra was saying, that Hashem considered when it comes to the Yamsuf, that's the best way to punish the Mitzrayim, and there you have all these adirs, all this power together. And therefore, in other words, so Keren Erda continues with his explanation that, in other words, that now that we see, in other words, that the Jewish people, we inform the world about Hashem with our Avodah, and then that happened was Yetzias Mitzrayim and Kabbalah Satorah. And therefore, so you have that. So you're going to go through four different drushas like this of expressions like this, where we have of the same word repeated again and again. And he explains. It means we have four different stages of the Gilui or the course in the world. And therefore, he's saying in effect the Jewish people do deserve credit for it, because through them Hashem caused these tremendous Kiddush Hashem in the world.
You see.
Okay, so then again, the Keren Erda is saying it's basically an argument back and forth between us Jewish people and Hashem. We're not saying that we don't deserve any credit, but we're saying that Hashem says the main credit goes to the Avos, and Reb Ezra, according to this, is answering that, you know what, we Jewish people also deserve the credit as having been the vehicle through which Hashem brought a knowledge of Hashem to the world. Okay.
So more than that, if we weren't here, the source of the Avos would also not be here in the world.
So we need both, really. We need there to be others. We need there to be the source of the others, and we also need there to be the
source
of the
others. We need them, and then need us.
Yeah.
Basically.
Okay. Yeah. So let's go on. Yeah.
You also have yesterday's pizzas.
That's true also, right? Not only Moshe Davin, the schus of the others, but Hashem says, you think that if the schus of the others is used up, then I won't help the Jewish people. I'm going to help them because of Yud Gimel Midas Arachmi. Right, so there's that also, yeah. Okay. So similarly, Reb Ezra continues with drushes in a similar vein. another angle on Gilui Elokos in the world. Yavu Yidid, then Yidid, let the beloved one, the son of the beloved one come, the Yivne Yidid, and build the beloved Beis HaMikdash, Li Yidid, for the beloved Jewish people, the Chelka Sho Yidid, in the portion of Eretz Yisrael that belongs to the beloved Shevet Binyamin, the Iskakru Bo Yididim, and the Jewish people who are beloved of Hashem will have their kapara over there. So what does that mean? Yavu Yidid Zeh Shloima HaMelech, the first Yidid refers to Shloima Dichtiv. When Shlomo was born, the passage is Vayishlach B'yad Nosan Anavi. Hashem sent a message, the true Nosan Anavi, Vayichra Shmo Yedidya, and he named him, besides his basic name was Shlomo. But Hashem also sent the Navi to call him Yedidya, Ba'avur Hashem, because Hashem loved him. So we see, therefore, that Shlomo is called Hashem's beloved, Hashem's friend. Ben Yedid is the descendant of the beloved ones, Avraham. The passage says, Meli Yedidi Vivesi. What is my friend doing in my house? The Gemara is going to explain soon that the drasha that's referring to Avraham Avinu coming to daven for the Jewish people at the time of the Churban, and Hashem tells him that there are various are too much and I can't accept your tefillas. But we see that as it calls Avraham Yedidi. Tosfos, by the way, points out there's a simple meaning of the pasuk that's talking about Yirmiyahu was trying to daven on behalf of the Jewish people. But Tosfos points out that also a relevance of this in halacha, when we have the bracha after by Bris Mila, the bracha Shekidish Yedid Mi Beter, who was the Yedid that Hashem sanctified from the womb? So based on our Gemara over here, that would mean Avraham Avinu, that even before he was born, Hashem already chose him for what he's going to accomplish in the world. As opposed to a different way of explaining that, and then in that case, then you have a triple expression in that bracha. Ashakidit Yidid Mi Beten would refer to Avraham. V'choit b'she'erei sam. Hashem placed a seal in his flesh that would refer to Yitzchak, who was actually even named Yitzchak before he was even born. V'tzeetzav chosam ba'os b'skodesh, and then his descendants, Hashem sealed with the sign of the holy covenant, refers to Yah. Then Tosfos says another explanation, Ashikidish Yidid Mi Beten would refer to Yitzchak, and then Choy B'She'eres Sam, that Psalm Chosam, Ois B'Shkodesh, would refer to Yaakov and the Shevatim. An interesting point, Baal HaTorim says on the Pasuk, that the word, when Hashem says to Avraham, Es Brisi Okim Es Yitzchak, I will establish my Bris with Yitzchak, the words Okim are an acronym for Asher Kiddush Yidid Mi Beten, which is another reason to say that Yidid actually refers to Yitzchak. But again, our Gemara is saying over here that Yidid refers to Avraham. Anyway, continues Reb Ezra, the Yivne Yedid, he should build the beloved things at Beis HaMikdash. Dichtiv, my Yedid is Nishkan Esecha, the Pasuk says, how beloved are your dwelling places, Hashem. Li Yedid, on behalf of the beloved Jewish, for the Yedid, as the resting place for the beloved one, Zachadosh Baruch Hu, that means Hashem himself, who's also called the Yedid. Dichtiv, Ashir Anol Yedidi, the Navi says, I'm going to sing a song on behalf of Yedidi, on behalf of my beloved, Zachadosh Baruch Hu, about the history of the Jewish people. So when he said before that he would build the Yedid, Li Yedid means not for the Jewish people, it means for the sake of Hashem, who is called Yedid. The Chelka She Yedid, it'll be in the portion of the Yedid, Zeh Binyamin. This is Binyamin, who's called specifically Yedid, Shenemel, Binyamin Amma, Yedid Hashem, Yishkan Levat HaChalav, Moshe's Bracha to Binyamin. And Vezeh's Bracha is that Hashem, the beloved of Hashem, who will dwell securely on him. Be scapula by Yedidim, and the Yedidim will have their kapara in the Beis Hamikdash. Every Yisrael, that refers to the Jewish people. Dichtiv, Nasati is Yedidus Nafshi b'chap oyevel. As Hashem, so to speak, mourns over the fact that I had to destroy the Beis Hamikdash and send the Jewish people into Golos, I put my beloved one into the hands of her enemies. So we see that the Jewish people are so, even at a time like that, are called Hashem's beloved one. So in other words, first we were talking about Adir, we were talking about the greatness of the Jewish people descended from the mighty others, and the Jewish people themselves are mighty in serving Hashem. Now we're talking about the closeness and the Ava that we have to the Eibishter. Then he continues, Yovei Toiv, Hashem also said when it comes to giving the Torah, Yovei Toiv, let the good one come, the Kabbal Toiv, and receive the good Torah, Mi Toiv, from Hashem who is good, La Toivim, for the Jewish people. Yovei Toiv Zemoshe. The first Toiv refers to Moshe. Dichtiv Batera Oseki Toiv. When he was born, his mother saw that he was Toiv. The Kabbal Toiv Zutora. Dichtiv Lekach Toiv Nasati Lochem. I have given you a good teacher. So that's the Torah. Me Toiv, he will receive from the good one, Zehakarish Baruch Hu. That refers to Hashem. Dichtiv Toiv Hashem Lakol. The positive Hashem is good to all. Latoyvin for the Jewish people, Elo Yisrael refers to the Jewish people, Dichtebe, Tiv Hashem Latoyvin, Hashem do good for the good ones. So here we're talking about the goodness. And Marsha points out, you know, that you have, we talk about something good, sometimes it can be good because it tastes good or feels good or whatever. Sometimes it can be good because it's good as in it does its job, it's effective. But then you have Toiv as in pure Toiv itself, something which is intrinsically good. So that's what we're saying. The Torah is intrinsically good, and the Jewish people are intrinsically good, and so forth. Not just that they're useful, not just that they're pleasant or whatever, but that all of these things that he's mentioning over here are all intrinsically good, and therefore they're described as Torah. And the last thing, when it comes to receiving another way, another point about receiving the Torah, Yoveh Zeh, this one, the one who's referred to as Zeh, namely Moshe, will come, be Kabal Zois, and receive Zois, which is the Torah, Mi Zeh, from Hashem, who is referred to as Zeh, La'am Zu, for this nation. Yoveh Zeh, Zeh Moshe, Dechtiv Ki Zeh Moshe Ish, as the Pasuk refers to him in this week's parasha, this man Moshe. Vi Kabal Zois, Zu HaTorah, Dechtiv Zois HaTorah, Asha Sam Moshe, this is the Torah, that Moshe placed before the Jewish people. Mi Zeh, he will receive it from Zeh, Zeh HaKadosh Baruch Hu, refers to Hashem, Dichtiv Zeh Keli Vanvehu, this is my God, and I'll beautify him. Le'amzu, Eli Yisrael, Shanema Amzu Karnisa, as we also have in the Shira, the nation that Hashem, this nation that Hashem acquired. So in other words, so Marshall says, in other words, the point of it is, now, so Hashem wants to give the goodness of the Torah, but why Dapke in Moshe's time? Why not in previous generations? What did Hashem change his mind, Chas v'Shalom? So he says, no, Hashem was waiting. Zeh means something that you can single out from anything else, and that you can point to Marabet Zloiva Omer Zeh. So therefore, so each one, the Torah and the Jewish people and Moshe, are each unique in their way, and therefore the Torah, the unique Torah, had to be given from the unique Hashem through the unique Navi Moshe to the unique nation Amzu Kanisa. And therefore that's the point of this Zerusha. So again, the Keren Ora has his point that you have four different levels of Gilui Elokus and four different levels of connection between Hashem and the Jewish people, and therefore Rav Ezra, in token of that, said four Zerushas. So the Gemara continues. We've quoted before the pasuk at the top of the Amud, Meli Didi Bezesi. What is my friend doing, my beloved one doing in my house? So what was going on over there? Amud Yitzchak, B'shar Shachara Beis Mikdash. When the Beis Mikdash was destroyed, Motzei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Avraham Shari Omid Beis Mikdash. Hashem found Avraham was standing in the Beis Mikdash. Amaloi, and he asks him, Meli Didi Bezesi. What is my beloved one, my friend, doing in my house? What are you doing here, Avraham? So we should, let's quote the whole pasuk. The whole pasuk in Yirmiyah goes like this. Again, Poshet Pshat is referring to Yirmiyah himself, that Hashem is saying to Yirmiyah, you're my beloved one, Yirmiyah, you're my Navi, but what are you doing, davening for the Jewish people when their avodas are so tremendous? So the pasuk goes like this, Meli Didi Bevesi, what is my beloved one doing in my house? They have done many deliberate avodas, of Sar Kodesh Yavru Me'aloich, and the holy flesh has gone away from you. Kira Oseichi, Oztaloizi, when you're doing bad, then you're happy. So now the Gemara is going to doubt him phrase by phrase that this is a dialogue between, this is Hashem's side of a dialogue between him and Avraham Avinu. So what are you doing, Meli Didi Bevesi, what are you doing in my house? Amaloi, so Avraham answers, I'll be skid bonai bossi, I came regarding my children to daven for them. Amaloi, so Hashem says, bonai hachotu v'golu, that your children have done avedas, and they've gone to golus. Amaloi, so Avraham says, Shem of a shoygig chotu, but maybe it was only b'shoygig, maybe it wasn't so bad. Amaloi Sashem says no, as the pasuk continues, Asoi Samzi Mosa. They've done avedas deliberately. Hamzi Mosa means like with plotting. So they wasn't just the shogig. Daniel Yoder points out, Avraham is asking, maybe look, you know, we find that they weren't learning Torah properly. Maybe that was the problem. Maybe they just didn't know what they're doing. And Hashem says no, it's Hamzi Mosa. They knew very well what they were doing. Amaloi Avraham says, Shema mi utan chotu. Maybe it was only a minority of them who did the Avera, and the Roiv not. Amaloi HaKadosh Baruch Hu Harabim. So Hashem says, no, Harabim. In Poshet Pshat, Hamzim Mosa Harabim means many deliberate Averas. The Gemara is taking them apart and saying, Hamzim Mosa, deliberate Averas. Harabim, most of the people were doing it. Now, we don't have to say necessarily that it actually means most of the people are doing it. The Gemara mentions elsewhere that when you have people who are capable of being moicha, they're capable of protesting against the Averis, and they don't, then they're responsible. So it could mean that over here as well. But the point is, in other words, there's enough people involved in it that Hashem says I have to judge them appropriately. Amaloi, Avraham answers, Hoyla chalizko lahem bris mila. But at least you could remember on their behalf, you could remember bris mila. That's one mitzvah that's constantly with them. Amaloi Hashem says, it doesn't work. Of Sarkodesh Yabra my life. The holy flesh has gone away from them. In other words, Jewish people are not being Mekayim the Mitzvah of Mila. So therefore, they don't have that source either. What's the Allah Yich? May Allah Yich, Marsha points out, means Hashem is saying, it's your mitzvah that I gave you a bris milah, but now, but Hashem is saying, they took away from themselves this mitzvah that's on you. I gave this mitzvah to you personally, Avram, and they're not keeping it. So Avram says, but maybe if you waited longer to punish them, they would have done tshuva. And in fact, Maharsha points out, the Gemara tells us elsewhere in Gittin, that Hashem moved up the date of the Churban by 2 years. The original plan was that the Jewish people were going to be in Eretz Yisrael 852 years before Hashem would punish them. The Gematria of the word V'nei Shantem, in the end, it was 850 years. So Avram is saying, maybe you should have given them that break, given them the 2 more years. Hashem answers him with the end of the pasuk. When they're doing bad, then they're being happy. So therefore, if I had waited longer, they wouldn't have done any tshuva. And in fact, as the Gemara tells us in Gittin, then Hashem would have had to destroy them completely. Rahmal Islam. So therefore, Hashem is saying I did like the least worst option. Now, miyad niach yodav arosha. Right away, when Avraham heard that, he put his hands on his head in a gesture of mourning. And he's crying, and then he's screaming and crying. What's going to be with my children? What's going to be with the Jewish people? And he says to Hashem, Shema chas v'shalom, ein lam takana. Is there maybe no takana? Is there never any way of fixing them up? And they're never going to have. They're never going to do tshuva. They're never going to have a gula. In Yisrael, the gula and the tshuva, as Maharsha points out from the Gemara and Sanhedrin. So if you're telling me that they're so bad, they may never do tshuva. They may never have a gula. He has his hands on his head. Ben Yehoyada points out the symbolism of that is the hands are maisa, the head is machshava. So he's saying like both the maisa and machshava are corrupt, then what hope is there for them? Yotza Baskel v'omerloi, so Baskel came out and answered him with the words of the next pasuk there in Yirmiyah. Zayus ran in your fe'fri soya kora Hashem shmeich. Hashem has called your name a leafy olive tree, a fresh leafy olive tree with beautiful fruit. Hashem has called your name. Meaning the Jewish people are compared to an olive tree. Ma zayis zuach riseh b'soifoi. An olive tree, its future, its destiny is at its end. Rashi says two explanations. You plant an olive tree and it takes a long time for it to start growing fruit. So the same way, the Jewish people are going to have a long history, a long galus, but there's going to come fruit out of it and beauty of it. Rashi's second explanation is that olives don't, many trees, the fruit ripens gradually, but here you have an olive tree not. All of a sudden, one day, it's not one day, the crop on it is not ripe, and the next day the whole thing becomes ripe. So the same way, in other words, that the Jewish people will all of a sudden, out of nowhere, they will do tshuva. Afisura, Achris and Basoifa, in the same way, the Jewish people, their future is at their end, their destiny is at their end. There will be a long golus, but eventually Yisrael Oysen Truva Omiyad Hein Negolin. Marshal says another meaning of Achris and Besoifan is what's the greatness of an olive? Not so much to eat them as olives, but to press them into olive oil. The same way it means the Jewish people are going to go through tremendous pressures and tremendous suffering in golus, but out of it will come the beautiful oil of Torah and Mitzvahs. So the Gemara continues. Now the second half of that pasuk also, though, let's consider that. Those words, Zayis Zanin, if they free Sarah, Kor Hashem Shmeich, is the first half of the pasuk. The pasuk continues, L'kol Hamula G'dola, because of the loud noise, with a great loud noise, Hitzis Eish Aleha, Hashem has set a fire on it, V'ro Dol Yosef, and it broke its branches. So what does that mean? Amar Rav Chinen Rav Papa, l'kol milayim from Meraglim, because of the words of the Meraglim, hamula, meloshin milos, of the Meraglim, of the words of the Meraglim, because of that, because of what they spoke badly against Eretz Yisrael, the Jewish people accepted it, nisroyu dol yisein shol Yisrael. Therefore, the high branches of the Jewish people were broken down, and the Beis Hamikdash was set on fire. The Amr of Chinin about Papa, what was so bad about what the Meraglim said, as Reb Chinin about Papa himself says, Dover Godel Dibu Meraglim Ba'os Hashal. The Meraglim, when they spoke against Eretz Yisrael and against Hashem, they said a tremendous bad thing at that point. They said on the Goyim in Eretz Yisrael, Pichazakum Mimenu. He's more mighty Mimenu. Now, the simple meaning of Mimenu means than us, but I'll take Mimenu ever Mimenu. Don't read Mimenu as than us, but rather Mimenu as from him. Rashi elsewhere says that this is not really a right gusa. Both kinds of mimenu are pronounced the same. An al-tikri is supposed to be that it's pronounced differently. You know, there's a lot of discussion about maybe in some mesodas they are in fact pronounced differently when it means than us or than him. Maybe the Gemara just means not al-tikri as in it's pronounced differently but understand it differently. In any case, they're saying kichozaku mimenu. They're saying that the goyim and Eretz Yisrael are more mighty than him, than Hashem. Kavyochol, they're saying, so to speak, trapped to the Balabais, and Yocholahit Kalem Misham, that even the Balabais is not able to take his Kalem out of there because they're too powerful for him. So in other words, they're claiming that the Goyim of Eretz Yisrael are more powerful than Hashem. Of course, we have many, many explanations and chassidus about the underlying mistake of theirs, that they thought that living in Eretz Yisrael and Gashmius is going to take them away from connection with the Eibishter, and therefore that Hashem himself wouldn't be able to prevent them from falling into Gashmius. But nevertheless, it's still a chutzpahdika thing to say, as though these guys are more powerful than Hashem. And because the Jewish people accepted that, So because of that, l'kol ha'mula gdola, because of that great sound of those words, hitzis eishalash, and eventually, hundreds of years later, burnt the bismikdash. But the Gemara says, maskefa r'chia b'chinina. But r'chia b'chinina asks on that, it doesn't really work with the words of the pasuk. Maybe r'chia b'chinina is the son of r'chinina, blah, 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 I don't know. But anyway, hay l'kol ha'mula gdola, then why use the word ha'mula? Ha'mula means a noise, a tumult. L'kol mila mi'barila, I should say, because of the sound of the words. Ella said now, no, Rabchia Bachinina learns it differently. Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Avraham means Hashem says to Avraham, after all, you're crying over what's going to be with the Jewish people. Kirtha Shamaiti, I heard what you say, I heard your voice. L'koil, Hamula, V'chamalti Alehem. And I had mercy on them. Hamula, we're darshaning as if it said Hamula with a ches, as we talked about before. Very often Chazal interchange hey and ches in Jerushalayim. What's the mercy? Ani amarti yishtabdu ba'albi malchus kolachas vachas kashir abu malchus. My original plan, says Hashem, that the Jewish people were going to be subjugated to each of the four kingdoms, the size of the one ended up being. In other words, for example, Golos Bava was 70 years. Golos Poras Mada was 52. Yovan was 180. Edom was still in. The original plan, Hashem says, was that it was going to be that first there's going to be a Golos Bava which is going to be equal in size to all of those amounts. Instead, each one is only going to have its period of time. So the Jewish people are going to be at different times in the world. There will be people under the control of Babel, people under the control of Paras and Yavan and Edom. But this way, in other words, it runs concurrently rather than having to be the entire Jewish people having to be for a long time under Babel, and then the entire Jewish people for a long time under Paras and under Yavan and under Edom. Instead, it gets divided up so that different people are in Golos in different places, and that shortens the total length of Golos. The Ikadam, another version is, so the first version actually, the first version is, in other words, that we'd say like this. There's 70 of Babel, 52 of Paras Amada is 122, 180 of Yavan makes now 302, and 1900 plus of, so the original plan, Hashem says, what it would have been, for example, 2,200 years just of Babel, another 2,200 years just of Paras Amada, etc. Instead, each one has only the time that was set aside for it, 70 for Babel, 52 for Paras Amada, etc., rather than having each one be a combination of all of them. The Ikadami, another version, I said it's going to have to be one after the other, so it's going to have to be a much longer time, first everybody under Babel, then everybody under Paras Amada, etc. Achshav b'vasachas, whereas now it can happen b'vasachas, the golos can be made much shorter because you have some people in one country and some in another, and therefore you have some people are being ruled over by. So in other words, the idea would be, let's say, for example, there was supposed to be originally 2,200 years of Babel. Fine. Instead, what you have is 70 years of the entire Jewish people under Babel, and the rest of the time, some people under Babel, some people other under countries. And that way it shortens the Golos a great deal. For that matter, there's a well-known medrash that I've quoted a lot of times, that when even one yid goes in a place to Barbaria or Samarkia or whatever, different place, different out-of-the-way places, then it can be considered as though the whole Jewish people went into Golos over there, because this person works on Bir and Itzutis over there, and therefore he accomplishes in that one place what an entire Jewish people would have had to over there. So this is another explanation then of the Rachmanus that Hashem has. Because of your voice, Hamula Gdola, Hashem says, I have great Rachmanus on the Jewish people. Okay, so the Gemara finishes off this explanation that we said the Jewish people are compared to an olive tree. Omer Rabbi Shur ben Levi, Loma Nimshu di Yisrael Zayis. Why are the Jewish people compared to an olive tree? Loma Lof to tell you, Ma Zayis ain't olive notion, Loma Mesachamim, Loma Mesachamim. An olive tree is evergreen. The leaves don't fall off during the winter like many other trees. Af Yisrael, Ein Lam Betei Loi Lomis, Loi Boi Lomis Ever Loi Lomal Lomal Lomal. The same way the Jewish people will never cease to exist and never cease to be fresh and to continue to be have vitality in this world or in the next world. The Amr of Yechon, Lama Nimshe Yisrael Azayis, and also why are the Jewish people compared to an olive tree? Lama Lach to tell you, Mazayis and Emotzi Shamna, Elayde Ksisa, an olive gives out its oil only by being crushed, Af Yisrael, in Chorzen Lamutav, Elayde Yisurin, the same way the Jewish people return to good only through Yisurin. Well, it doesn't have to be Yisurim from the outside goyim. It can be internal Yisurim, as in the Maimer of Atta Tetzaveh, that the last Maimer that the Rebbe gave us, where the idea is the person feels his own internal ksisha, his own internal feeling crushed by golos, and that motivates to do tshuva, mais, and brings the goal of miyad marish.